Welcome to the Business Coach Podcast, an advice-oriented series that tackles the top issues and opportunities facing Canada's small businesses. I'm your host, Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, and we've developed this podcast in cooperation with BMO, Bank of Montreal. Franchises represent one of Canada's most popular paths to business ownership. Franchised outlets number more than 78,000 in Canada, employing more than a million people. And to quote the Canadian Franchise Association, every year, thousands of Canadians are improving their lives by becoming franchisees. It might be added that a significant number of franchisees encounter some unwelcome surprises in franchise ownership, and that's often because they are not aware of key terms in their franchise agreements, which are those contracts that dictate the rights and obligations of the franchisee and the franchisor, respectively. As the national leader of the Franchise and Distribution Group at Borden Ladner Gervais, Blair Rabain is a specialist in franchise law. He joins me on the line from his office in Vancouver to provide a primer on franchise agreements and to point out some of the key clauses that often trip franchisees up. Blair, welcome to the Business Coach Podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start with a general overview of the franchisor-franchisee relationship. What can you tell us about the basic obligations on each side?
Well, I think from the franchisor's perspective, the obligation is they're multifaceted, but the key obligations that I look to is ownership of certain trademarks, trade names that the franchisees will get the right to use as part of becoming a franchisee of the system. So, for example, somebody like A&W, if you're becoming an A&W franchisee, you want to know that your franchisor has proper ownership rights to the name. I think another one is having operating systems. One of the great benefits of becoming a franchisee is that you get operating systems, how to do it, how to run the business. And mature franchisors have very detailed operating systems in place so that a franchisee who comes into the business is not learning everything from scratch. It takes away the trial and error. From the other perspective, what obligations does the franchisee have? Well, it kind of comes back to that very operating standards. One of the real key obligations on a franchisee is to operate their business in compliance with the operating standards and procedures of the franchisor. Why? Well, me as a customer, when I go to a franchise business, I expect to get the same experience at each and every location. I don't want to get a vastly different experience. If I go to a Subway, I expect to get the same type of sandwich, the same type of service. And the value of the brand and the value of the individual franchises is very dependent on that compliance with the system standards and operating procedures.
That's great, Blair. We're going to get into some of the specifics of franchise agreements in a minute, but let's preface that with a discussion about how standard these contracts are and how negotiable they are. When a franchisee is presented an agreement for their perusal and eventually their signature, how much wiggle room do they have in negotiating that?
You know, it's a great question, and I'm going to give you that great legal answer. It depends. Why do I give you that answer? If you're talking about a mature franchise system in Canada, a Boston Pizza, an A&W, a 1-800-GOT-JUNK, for example, those systems are very likely going to have almost no flexibility in allowing an individual franchisee to negotiate their standard contract. It's going to be a take it or leave it. The franchisee has to understand what's in the contract, but it's largely a take it or leave it. A smaller brand or a startup franchise system, that's the it depends. The smaller brand who needs more franchisees, is just starting out, they tend to allow you to be a little bit more negotiable on some of the business type terms. Not the legal terms, but some of the business terms.
So one of the key terms within a franchise agreement is actually the term of the contract and the renewal rights. What should a franchisee look for? I would presume that's pretty clear what the term would be, but they might be wondering whether they're going to have the opportunity to renew.
And I think that is a key term that is often missed by franchisees. There needs to be enough term so that the franchisee can make back their original investment and a reasonable profit. And there needs to be some sort of renewal right. And sometimes what I see are franchisees entering into franchise agreements saying, well, I have a 5-year initial term and one right to renew for 5 more years. and you explain to the franchisee, that means you have 10 years. And after 10 years, the franchisor can simply say, I don't want to deal with you anymore because there's no more renewal right. And there's no obligation in law, says the case law, that a franchisor will have to provide the franchisee with a new agreement. So franchisees should be trying to get enough term. More term is to the benefit of the franchisee, and some franchisors will give more term when requested. You know, 10 years plus multiple renewal rights. Those sorts of things are much preferable.
Blair, when it comes to renewal rights, can a franchisee and a franchisor agree to certain milestones that will trigger an automatic renewal?
They can. It's rare you actually see it, but there can be milestones negotiated in that say if sales are at a certain level, then it triggers an automatic renewal right. If it's a development type arrangement for multiple locations, if so many locations are opened by that franchisee, that triggers a renewal right. So that's a possibility.
I guess another thing that trips up a lot of franchisees is that the franchise agreements require them to use certain suppliers and to buy certain products. Why do franchises do that? And again, do franchisees have much wiggle room?
Well, franchise systems do it for the reasons that I kind of described earlier, which is consistency. The concept, of course, the basic fundamental of franchising is the customer gets a consistent experience across the board. So that in order to bring that to fruition, a franchisor will require its franchisees to require the products it sells from designated suppliers or approved suppliers or from the franchisor themselves. That's all very good and has a system benefit, but franchisees have to understand that if it is a product supply type system, so a franchise system where it's really the resale of products, if the cost of acquiring the product is so great that there's very little margin on the resale, very little profit to be made, then it may not be a very profitable franchise system. So the key from a franchisee's negotiation is looking at the system and saying, well, is this the type of system where it's really a product resale? You know, it's not a restaurant, it's not cleaning services, but it's a version of product resale. In that scenario, a franchisee wants to spend a little more time trying to determine and trying to negotiate whether or not there are limits on the price increases at which the fundamental key products of the system are being sold to the franchisee.
Now, no business owner wants a direct competitor to open up in their market, but franchisees often find themselves in competition with members of the same franchise network. How does that happen, and should a franchisee insist on certain territorial rights?
It happens because most franchisors, not all, most, are very hesitant to give any version of restricted territory or territory to a franchisee where they'll say, by the way, I will not open another location within this area. On the other hand, some franchisors will do it. The real answer for a franchisee's concern has to come down to what's the nature of the business and is territory fundamentally important? So, for example, if you're opening a coffee cafe franchise, most will not give a trading territory. Here in Vancouver, anyways, there's a cafe on almost every corner, and having more in an area is actually seen as beneficial to raising brand awareness. On the other hand, if you're talking about a different type of franchise, a territory-based franchise, such as cleaning services or rubbish removal, territory is key because you don't want to be competing in your same territory with your own franchisees of the system. So it's very system dependent, and some franchisors will give you territory exclusivity. You need to look at the system and determine if it's an important key component. And if it is, then go to the franchisor and say, well, what are my territory protections? And if I want to be one of your franchisees, I'm going to require some territory protection.
Now, one of the things that surprises me about franchise agreements is they often include non-compete clauses, not only governing the franchisee's activity after the franchise agreement ends, but also for the duration of the contract. It puzzles me, how does a franchisee sort of get in competition with himself or herself and other members of the franchise network?
Well, I've been involved in this exact situation where a franchisee of a system all of a sudden has an opportunity to acquire another investment. And that other investment just happens to be a fairly direct competitor of the franchise system that they were already involved in. So you could take any number or take a Mexican food concept, and the franchisee decides, well, this has been really successful for me. Being a member of the franchise system, I now have an opportunity to open an independent restaurant somewhere else. And that is now being directly competitive either to their existing business or to another franchisee. You can understand, I think, why a franchisor says, hey, during the term of this agreement, you're not going to be competition with us in this area. From a franchisee's perspective, what they need to be careful of in looking at the franchise agreement is ensuring the scope of that non-competition is, in fact, not overly broad. And what do I mean by that? I think it's fair for a franchisor of a Mexican food concept, for example, to say you won't be involved in another sit-down restaurant that offers for sale Mexican food, including enchiladas, burritos, a number of things. But if that same franchisor wants to say any sit-down restaurant concept, I would argue from a franchisee's perspective, that's too broad because the burger restaurant is really not competitive with the Mexican food restaurant.
Franchisors make some of their money through the collection of royalties on sales by their franchisees, and they often take money from franchisees for a shared marketing fund. So, of course, that makes financial reporting an important part of the franchisee's job. What will the typical franchise agreement dictate on this front?
The typical agreement will require multiple levels of reporting by the franchisee. Firstly, there will be either weekly, biweekly, or monthly reporting of sales. Different systems have different reporting, but it'll just be reporting of sales. And that is so that the franchisor can calculate the royalty, which is a percent of gross sales. Most systems then require some quarterly financial reports. Some quarterly might be a profit and loss statement, income to that point, a couple of other types of reporting that I see. And then an annual reporting statement, which will be the financial statements of the franchisee for their financial year. The one thing franchisees should be careful of is there are a few franchisors out there who ask for that annual to be at an accounting level that's really not appropriate. They ask for audited financial statements. And for a small business franchise, the cost of audited financial statements really makes no sense. And what you typically go back to the franchisor on is say, well, look, you don't need audited financial. What is a much lower level of review and much cheaper, quite frankly, to have done, notice to reader, should be just fine. And almost all franchisors will accept it.
Couple more things, Blair. I think you would probably agree that every franchisee should look carefully at how either party can get out of the franchise agreement, and you would also recommend that they work with a franchise lawyer, a specialist, to review the agreement rather than somebody who practices more general law.
On both accounts, I mean, I think first and foremost, it's important to understand when the franchise agreement can come to an end. What are those circumstances? Most systems, the franchisee actually cannot get out of the franchise agreement. Not all, but most will say that they will have to continue to operate the business to the end of the term. Their only way out will be to sell the business, but they can't simply say, I'm walking away, I'm terminating the franchise agreement. There will be a whole list of circumstances wherein the franchisor can terminate the franchise agreement. Things such as if the franchisee starts to compete, like we talked about earlier, if the franchisee fails to pay royalties, if the franchisee fails to report, if the franchisee goes insolvent, a whole list of them, if they fail to follow the system. The second part of your question with respect to getting advice, I think it's got two angles to it. One, I think potential franchisees should read the franchise agreement themselves, go through it carefully, make notes as to what their questions are, and then they should retain the advice of a lawyer who does a lot of franchising work. And the reason is that lawyer will be more attuned to what the issues are in franchising. They will have looked at literally hundreds of franchise agreements. There are people out there like me who've looked at 500 to 1,000 of them. And I would look for someone with some experience in the area. And the reason I say that to people is you certainly wouldn't come to me for your divorce because I wouldn't even know where to start. best to go to somebody who has done that type of issue.
Blair, great advice, and thanks for joining the Business Coach Podcast.
You're most welcome.
Blair Rabain is the national leader of the Franchise and Distribution Group at Borden Ladner Gervais. He joined me from his office in Vancouver. That's it for another episode of the Business Coach Podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes, which you can download from BMO.com/coach, ProfitGuide.com, and iTunes. For other tools to help you build your business, visit the Small Business Resources section on BMO.com. Until next time, I'm Ian Portsmouth, the editor of Profit Magazine, wishing you continued success.